Welcome to episode 1 of the Ringside View podcast. My name is Chinmay and we're going to discuss India versus England with Michael Bourne. Michael, thank you for your time.
No problem.
I think we have to start off with India versus England. Let's begin with the ODIs. Has ODI cricket just reached another level or is this due to the pitches?
Well, I think there's many things that will obviously be explored. I think the grounds are smaller. You know, health and safety have brought the boundary roads in just a few metres, which is certainly helping.
All right.
The pitches are very good. I think the fact that the two new white balls, the ball staying obviously harder from either end, so the ball doesn't really deteriorate and get softer, which is making it a little bit easier to strike the ball in the last 10 or 15 overs. And also, okay. I think players these days have just got an awareness and ability to hit the ball 360. And, you know, if you also add into the equation the fifth fielder in the circle for the first 40 overs, you know, I just think it's an open opportunity for anyone that's got half a game on them now. There's always a boundary option. And you see that with the way that the players play, though. They take three or four balls, they realise they've not hit a boundary. There's always one zone that they can target. And they generally know how to hit the balls into the gaps these days. Very difficult for captains. And it really is an era where standout bowlers do stand out. Now, those that are exceptional stand out because it's very difficult to restrict that. And for the likes of Ashwin and these kind of bowlers who just offer a little bit of variation, mystery,
sure.
The ability to deliver skill under pressure, they stand out a mile. So I guess it's the players that deserve all the credit. But also, you know, the boundaries are a little bit smaller than used to be.
So let's move on to death bowling, specifically Yorkers. Now, a layman would say, why can't a professional cricketer, an elite cricketer playing at the international level, consistently bowl a good Yorker?
Yeah, and it's a reasonable question for an amateur cricketer to ask, but I think you've got to put in the equation the ramp shot. I think since up in these reverse ramps and the ability of the players to kind of just deflect that Yorker ball over fine leg, over third man for 4-6 in some occasions, I think it's made it harder for the bowler to trust that Yorker more so than they used to. I think in the old days, they got the Yorker and they knew that at best it was going to go for one run. And I think these days, they know that even that good Yorker, if that one plays it well, it can still be round. So I think that's made the bowler a little bit wary about bowling it. You know, I just think the actions are very important. I think if you've got pure action, so someone that shows you the ball all the time with a true English-style seamer action, I just think it's nice to face. I think these players like to see the vision of the ball and they get it early and they can stack it to wherever they want. I think those bowlers that, again, in this era that have had success bowling, seem to have bowled express pace, or their
sure.
skill levels are incredible, or they've got something a little bit different in their action. You know, look at Melinda. Melinda's a genius because he has that slingy action, very hard to pick, but he's got a terrific slow ball. And, of course, he nails that Yorker. Because of the trajectory of his ball being a bit skiddier, you know, I think the batsmen find it hard to get under it to ramp it. So, you know, you look at Bumrah for India, I like him because I think
yep.
his action is just a little bit different. I think it's harder for the batsman to pick it up. So if I was giving any advice to teams around the world playing T20 and 50 over one day cricket against these style of bats, I think you've got to have a little bit of mystery in your attack, and it's not in terms of a spinner that can spin it both ways. I think the seamers have to just have an action that's just a little bit harder for the batsman to pick up.
Sure. I mean, I've seen you tweet a lot about this and I've read a couple of your columns as well. This is specifically on Virat Kohli. Now, there's always a debate on who the best
yeah.
cricketer in the world is. But in your opinion, has Kohli pulled ahead during the last year, year and a half or so?
Yeah, I do. I think he's the best player. You know, I think there's players close to him in different formats, but across the
sure.
three formats, I think he's the best. I mean, Steve Smith's test cricket is a revelation. He's had a wonderful year. So he might match Virat in test cricket, Joe Root, across all the three formats. You know, very close. You know, you have specialists in one day cricket, you have specialists in T20 cricket, but I think across all the three formats, Virat has mastered pretty much the ball. Of course, people say that, but he hasn't been sweeper yet.
Yep.
You know, when he was back here in, I think, 2013 or 14, he just didn't have the right technique. His technique was all over the place, he's worked that out. And I think what he's brought to Indian cricket more than just the playing, I think his ability to re-educate an Indian fan, an Indian team, actually, fitness and nutrition is crucial. You know, the movement and agility that you require now at the highest level, his ethics towards fitness and his ethics towards what he eats is now the ultimate sports pro. And there's not been many cricketers over our time where they've been so dedicated. You get real dedication in tennis, in athletics, these Olympians who just dedicate their lives 24/7.
Yep.
And I think Virat is one of those very few that's going to going to change Indian cricket. I really believe that. I think if you're looking at his players and his team, and they'll say, well, you've got to be fit, you've got to be stronger, you've got to train harder in the field. And that's the one thing that Indian cricket, they can still be better fielders. They're a long way off being a really good fielding team.
Yeah.
And if they can become a really, really top-notch fielding team, you know, with their bowling in the batting that they have already, they're going to be an incredible cricket team. So I think Virat is leading the way, and I think a lot of the players around the world are looking at Virat and the way that he's gone about his change in 2012 with his fitness, with his nutrition, and I think many are going to follow suit. He's almost grabbed his moment and said, you know, for 15 years I'm playing cricket, I'm now not going to miss a trick, I'm not going to miss this opportunity that he's been given. He's a wonderful talent and gift, but you just know that he's just not going to miss this opportunity of doing something special.
Sure. A few questions on the Test series. So here's what I think. I have consistently maintained that this England Test side is one of the best teams in the world. Cook and Root could be in the World 11 Test team. I think it's easy to accept that Stokes is one of the best all-rounders in the world. The seam attack does look good on paper. My point is these guys are not pushovers, so why weren't they competitive enough?
Well, because you just said it, on paper, there's many teams on paper that are very strong. England's Test team have been inconsistent for a while now. They've won some good series, they went into South Africa, they beat Australia in 15.
Yep.
But they've also played some poor cricket as well, and it's that inconsistency level. The amount of talent and abilities they have in the team, you mentioned the seamers, you mentioned the all-rounder,
yep.
You mentioned the batting, which is so deep, you've got to go to number 9 and 10 at times, you've got Cook, you've got Root, you've got Johnny Best, who's scored more runs than any other wicketkeeper has ever scored in a year in Test match cricket. But that's the problem, you know. They've just not become a side that play into a consistent level, and that's frustrating for them as well. You know, playing in India is not easy.
Yeah.
You know, I never expected England to win in India, but I did expect them to compete a little bit more. You know, if you look, they won the toss 4 times, and we all felt the toss was going to be crucial. Well, they didn't have that excuse. They got beyond 400 on a couple of occasions, won by them in the last game, yet lost by an inning. You know, so it was the manner of defeats which was worrying and a bit disappointing to the side. Not the loss, I think everyone expected them to lose, but there's a way in which you lose, and I think England didn't fight hard enough on those last couple of days of the Test matches. They almost kind of, they didn't lie down, because they don't do that. They have an English spirit, but they didn't play strong enough when the pressure was on during the last stage of the match. That was disappointing.
Yep. So one of the points that came up early on was the presence of a good spinner, and a lot of people pointed that out as the difference between the two teams. So my question would be, is the presence of a spinner that important in the subcontinent? Because teams have won in India in the past with a seam heavy attack. Now I realize England doesn't quite have a, you know, Steyn or a McGrath, but it's still a good seam attack.
Yeah, I think it's a viable excuse. I also think the batsmen have to look themselves in the mirror. I just don't think we mentioned we got 400 in Mumbai, we got 400 in Chennai, but you know, those wickets probably par was 500. Yeah, so they should have been getting 550. When England won in Mumbai in 2011, when took that team, Kevin Peterson played an incredible innings that we still all talk about, and many put it in the top 5 innings by English player of all time. You know, so yeah, they had Swan and Montipanasar, but it was the fact that Peterson destroyed India on that occasion. He lost the toss, didn't he? He got 330 odd. It was a competitive score, and then Peterson went and got them a lead, and they were down to Monty and Swanee. Now, yes, I think Swan and Monty made a big difference, but it was they got big scores on the board. You know, they batted long periods of time, and also the pitches deteriorated a lot more than we saw throughout the series. And I think that was one thing that I would have thought India learned from 2011, that was amazing, the pitches degrading, and then they won the look. They went 1-0 up, I thought they were complete roads, and back there spinning the game stars. Well, they actually brought England into the game in Mumbai by making it a little bit of a trusty one. But it's still a great series win. England, like South Africa, like Australia, we're all wanting an Ash win, or we're wanting a Shane Warne, we're wanting a Murray Richard, but there's not many out there, so you've got to compete with what you've got. And England have enough players and enough skill levels in their side to compete better than we saw in India over 5-10 matches.
So you'd mentioned Peterson, so I have to ask you a question about him. You've captained him before. Everyone outside the UK can't seem to understand why he isn't being picked. So what was your experience with him? Because you were his captain, and he, along with Flintoff, who some would also describe as a personality, helped you win the Ashes. So clearly you managed them well.
Yeah, I mean, I got him at the start of his career, so you know, many will say that's probably the easiest time to get him. He had everything to prove. You could argue that that's correct, but Yeah, I think with Kevin Peterson and the guys like him, you've just got to manage them on a day-to-day basis. You do have to give them a little bit extra. You know, I do think you do have to spend a bit more time with those style of characters. If you just think, you know, we're one team, we're all as one, you know, we all are exactly the same, and every single player gets treated the same. I think outwardly to the team when you're with them, yes, that's true. You know, you have to treat everyone as one, but, you know, a real leader and a leader that's manages tools the best, I believe, spends more time with these kind of players away from the team environment to make sure that, you know, they've got them in the right state of mind. You know, he had so much knowledge and experience to give, but, you know, I just felt it was a timing around 10, 11, 12 where they won an Ashes series in Australia. They won a couple of series, then they got beat in Pakistan 3-0, then after South Africa came, they did a good idea 2-0, they were just the best team. And maybe they just thought they were better than what they really were. Yeah, they were a good team, but they weren't an outstanding team. Yep. I don't think England ever have had an outstanding team in Test cricket, to be honest. And, you know, in my time, I'm talking back in the 60s and 70s, I'm sure they did, but, you know, in my time watching England and playing for them, we've never had an outstanding team. We've had good teams. I just felt that 10-11 team, maybe just felt they were just on a pathway that they probably weren't on. Then you have characters and confrontations, and so Kevin Peterson just needs a little bit of an arm around the shoulder to tell him, and he's telling what he's required from him on a regular occurrence. But also, you need to grab his knowledge, you need to grab his expertise, because as much as he says some silly things, there's plenty of stuff that Kevin said that is goldfish for the game of cricket and also for the team. So it's a shame what's happened. He certainly won't come back and play for England, but, you know, I'm glad that he's shown people in the big class that he's still a tremendous player, and he's kind of shown us all that we've missed him. We've missed that level of kind of ability to take the opposition on in pressure situations in one day cricket, test match cricket, because when he was on form, you know, he was certainly the best player that I played with.
Sure. I'm going to ask you a question about social media now. I mean, you're very active on it. When did you discover the joys of Indian Twitter? It's very easy to get a reaction from an Indian cricket fan on Twitter. I mean, everyone's very passionate about their cricket. But what was that one moment when you realized, oh God, my mentions are being overrun by Indian cricket fans?
I think it was probably when it was my first year on it, when I suggested that Sachin might not have been the best player that we played against, or in my time, I felt what Ricky Ponting was. Sachin's a great player, now he's a god, but, you know, we'd always managed to keep Sachin a little bit quiet, whereas Ricky Pont and I always used to look at him, you know, hard him getting out, he's always going to get the runs when it matters, he played an aggressive game. And I think in 2010 or something, I might have tweeted something about that. Well, you get a bombardment. Yep. It's just glad that you don't do that when you're in India, because you probably would get out alive. But, you know, I like passion, I love passion in all sports and in all forms of life. I think that's what you get with it. An Indian cricket fan. You get passion. They're very blinkered and one-eyed, which is fine, but I love passion. I love the energy they bring to the stadium. You know, I think cricket without an Indian cricket fan would be a very boring place. So, yeah, I love the passion that the Indian fan brings to Twitter, to the game, and to cricket in general.
Have you ever considered replying back to some of those tweets with that famous off-break that you bowled?
No. I mean, I've replied to many.
Yeah.
That's fine. You know, it's fine. I think on Twitter, if you have an opinion, you've got to expect that not everyone's going to agree with it. So you've got to get ready for the odd bombardment of abuse. You know, don't be on Twitter if you don't expect that you're going to get the odd tweet or so back to you that don't agree with what you're saying. That's fine with me.
Sure. Quick one. England, as you mentioned earlier, have a lot of all-rounders. I'm going to talk about two of them, Moeen Ali and Adil Rashid. Who would England pick as their primary spinner? Because this is an issue that's come up where people have said, you know, Moeen Ali and Rashid are good cricketers, but maybe might not be the number one spinner in England.
No, Moeen Ali, I think it's clear that Moeen's the best spinner. More consistent spinner across all the different conditions you play. That is the luxury spinner. There's not many late spinners that can stand alone as the sole spinner in a test team these days. Shane Warne was an exception.
Yep.
So even like Stuart McGill would have found it difficult to stand alone as a leg spinner. So I think it's hard for someone like Rashid to just be the sole spinner. He's perfect. And with the amount of all-rounds that England has, as you mentioned,
yep,
it does allow them to have that option of playing both. And, you know, England's batting's deep. The one thing I've looked to the test team is they need more expertise. They need more experts rather than a jack-of-all-trades. You know, they've got quite a few who can do a bit of everything, but they're not masters of one trade. So, you know, you've got good spinners, but they're not exceptional. You've got good batsmen, but they're not exceptional. So I think by bringing Hafeez Hameed and hopefully Jennings, they're kind of experts in their own field. With Alistair Cook, Joe Root, that's a top four that are experts in batting. You know, England have kind of tinkered because they've had to really try and find a formula. You know, from five downwards, they've got plenty of all-rounders, but,
yep.
You know, in time they hope to find a spinner that's an expert in that field. But I just think England are, you know, I'd love to catch them in England side. They've got that many options. You know, they've got so many options in terms of selection, in variations, in style of play. You know, so when I see, like, you're always looking, oh, I wouldn't mind having a pop at this while I'm catching them, because they've got a good energy about them, they play the game in the right way, their one-day cricket is phenomenal to what it was 2 years ago. And they all play with a smile on their face. They've got an energy about them, which is a good thing for a team.
Sure. So let's end on that note then about captaincy and your career as well, because you retired young, I mean, certainly by today's standards. And you'd mentioned somewhere, I couldn't quite find the interview where you'd said this, that you could have played after giving up the captaincy. And that's a bit of a theme that's around here as well, with Dhoni now playing under Kohli and Cook considering giving up the captaincy as well. So how exactly does that dynamic work if you were the captain and you now need to play a major role, but you're no longer the captain anymore?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the personality. I'd have found it difficult because I gave so much to the captaincy, you know, and I was pretty much involved in everything decision-wise, the way that the team played, selection, cultural side of the job. You know, I kind of just ran the whole operation with Lincoln Fletcher, so it'd be very difficult to kind of just step in and just be a soldier again. I think Alex Cook's different. I think he's more of a captain that's kind of on the periphery. He's not so quite in the face. So I think he will be an outstanding senior player playing in the side under someone like Joe Root. I think the Dhoni Kohli dynamic is an interesting one. I mean, again, I've never played with them, but they're both very energised, they're both very relaxed. You know, I like the way what Kohli's done at the minute. He's allowing Dhoni to still operate, he's still allowing Dhoni to stand behind the front and step field and create an angle with his arms. You know, you can see him all the time just moving field and tinkering here and there. I mean, the captain, I would love that. I would love to be able to stand up and down with the keeper, just changing angles, because the keeper has the best vision from the stumps, because he's in the standard position of the batsman. He can see exactly where the batsman's looking, and he can just tinker with the field. So it could be a perfect scenario. You've got, you know, a young captain in Virat. You know, he's a tremendous energiser. He's got a lot to learn in terms of the tactics, but that'll come. And then he's got a senior pro who's been there, doing that. He knows how to play the pressure card, just kind of guiding the team from behind the stumps, and I think that's a very, very healthy combination. As long as, you know, Emmett stood down in his own accord, you know, he decided to move on because he felt it was best in the team. I think it's a very, very strong position that you can get yourselves into. You've got a senior pro as captain who's absolutely pleased that he's now not the captain. He can just kind of watch him play, and clearly inspired him to get 100 the other day. So, you know, India are in a strong position in one day cricket in particular. I think they've got a nice combination of leadership. And I have to say, Anil Kumble, you know, getting in to be the coach of India was again a really good move. He's a strong man, very, very calm and influential just by being around because of his presence. He's very powerful. But I think he won't step over anyone's toes. He'll just allow the beer at the captain and get the team going in his direction. And, you know, I think he'll be delighted to have the likes of MS Dhoni still around playing. And, you know, that 2019 World Cup will be a spectacle. It'll be in England, it'll be a great occasion. We're looking forward to it.
Yep.
No question, by then, India will be one of the favourites, as will England, as will Australia, to lift that trophy.
Perfect. On that note, thank you so much for your time, Michael, and we look forward to hearing from you again.
All right, brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.